Today, we want to take a look at Alzheimer's. The disease affects 5 million Americans, attacking neurons, leading to problems with memory, thinking, and behavior. An FDA panel yesterday recommended approving a new imaging technology to help doctors spot signs of Alzheimer's in the brain. But there's no cure, and scientists aren't even sure what causes it. So how do you treat someone with a disease with no cure? Try a bar of chocolate, a nip of alcohol, or let patients play with a baby doll if that calms them down. That's part of the strategy at Beatitudes Campus in Phoenix, Arizona, a national leader for treating people with Alzheimer's. We first read about them in the New York Times, and the facility's CEO, Peggy Mullen, joins us from KJZZ in Phoenix. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Peggy, it was interesting that your director of research said that the state Medicaid board sort of balked at one of the invoices where you were charging them for chocolate as a treatment, when normally it might be something like Xanax. Tell us about that.
Well, it was actually a surveyor looking at one of our medical charts, and we had chocolate listed as an appropriate treatment for somebody when they were agitated. And that certainly drew the surveyor's attention. It's quite out of the norm. And certainly they did challenge that, but after we spent a little bit of time explaining why this worked and how it worked and the logic and science behind it, we really had a successful outcome with that surveyor.
Are you using fewer drugs than other typical nursing homes who have Alzheimer's residents?
Yes, we are. We're delighted to be able to tell people that we've demonstrated lower use of psychotropic medications, so all those meds that affect how we think and process information. We're also using no physical restraints in our buildings. We're able to demonstrate less weight loss, fewer hospitalizations and rehospitalizations, so many, many positive outcomes from this approach.
What's wrong with the psychotropic drugs?
Nothing per se, and there is, I do want to be clear that there's always a place for them, but they tend to be overprescribed for people, especially those folks that cannot make their needs and wants and fears known to us by articulating them clearly. They tend to carry so many side effects that actually cause another layer of distress, and it's that distress that often causes people with dementia to act out in behaviorally inappropriate ways. So this is one of those cases where the treatment is sometimes worse than the issue itself.
So the treatment is causing more trouble than it's worth in some cases.
That's exactly right. It can cause, anything from gastrointestinal distress to some other hallucinations or other kinds of psychological problems.
The New York Times article really focused in on a 96-year-old resident named Margaret Nance.
Yes.
And some of the unusual treatments that you use with her, can you describe some of them for us?
Well, sure. Lovely lady. One of the great joys in her life certainly was being a mother and raising a family. So when Margaret becomes distressed, the fastest way, the easiest way to soothe her is to give her a baby doll. She holds that doll. She treats it as her child, and you can have a fairly coherent conversation with her about how Benjamin is doing today. Early on, people were concerned that giving an older person a baby doll to hold or cuddle was demeaning. But quite frankly, what is more demeaning is to leave someone suffering unnecessarily. We give all kinds of medications to keep people from being fearful or from being agitated. Why in the world would we care if something as simple as a baby doll comforts someone? The same effect happens if we give someone a pet to hold and cuddle a little bit. Many of the interventions that we really believe in are very tactile in nature. It gives a person something to do with their hands. The doll may smell good or the puppy may feel good to them, and that distracts them from whatever the underlying cause of agitation is.
How did you come up with these approaches? Because they're not mainstream.
No, they're not mainstream. They're really pretty common sense, but there's actually an awful lot of research that has been happening over the last decade that we read, we decided to try, and lo and behold, it works. It has to do with how our brains recognize and hold pleasurable experiences. And I can give you a very good example that I think most of us can relate to. At 6 o'clock in the morning, the alarm goes off. We get up, we go for a walk. 2 hours later, we don't even remember. It's not in our consciousness that we went for that walk, but the work of those positive endorphins that we created is still helping us. The same thing happens to a person with dementia or Alzheimer's disease. They can have a pleasurable experience, whether it's a sensory stimulation or a happy conversation, at 10 in the morning. 2 hours later, they will not remember that. But they will eat a much better lunch because they had this positive experience. It's an afterglow effect that happens.
A stronger emotional memory.
Exactly. When we're pleased, we let down our guard. We're not as fearful. We feel safe. So many things happen when you stimulate a positive emotional experience for someone.
Many people I know with Alzheimer's get agitated and angry and sometimes violent over something as simple as it's lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And your focus is to make the residents feel as comfortable and as loved as possible. How do you do that at something like the lunch table or when you're trying to keep a schedule where you have about 30 residents who you're dealing with?
Well, first of all, the schedule no longer dictates how our folks live. We've got many people who are most active during the nighttime. Their circadian rhythms, for some reasons, have been reset, and so they may sleep a large portion of the day, but they tend to be awake in the evening and nighttime hours. What's wrong with having their bath at 2 in the morning? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. People with Alzheimer's disease cannot reset their clocks like the rest of us do. It's almost as though they're in a constant state of jet lag, and you know what that feels like. So rather than expecting them to accommodate our schedules, we accommodate their schedules.
Well, how can you do that with staff? You say it's simple, but it sounds pretty complicated to organize staff around that.
And that's a great distinction. It is simple, but it's not necessarily easy. You have to educate, first of all, both staff and residents and families as to what this approach is going to look like, the fact that it might be uncomfortable for a while. But over time, people begin to see the results of not forcing a person with dementia to do something that he or she is naturally resisting. And I think once people begin to see how powerful and how simple it is, it just begins to work. People begin to let go of those rigid structures that tend to regulate any organization that is licensed, especially a healthcare organization. But as you begin to relax those regulations and look at how you satisfy the person underneath, lo and behold, the regulations get met anyway because you have better outcomes with your person.
What kind of reward do you and your staff get from operating the nursing home in this way?
Nobody goes to work wanting to create chaos or wanting to make life more difficult for the people we're serving. So by providing care in a way that is exceptionally comfortable for the residents and for their families, we just get all kinds of affirmations from that. That gets our own endorphins moving.
We'll have more with Peggy Mullen, CEO of Beatitudes Campus, when we come back. We'll also speak to someone whose family member lives at Beatitudes. Back in a minute, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation today with Peggy Mullen, CEO of Beatitudes Campus in Phoenix, Arizona, where they're rewriting the book on treating Alzheimer's. Traditional schedules are out. Residents can eat, sleep, do activities when they want, and everything is centered on making residents feel at ease. We want to bring Mae Vance into the conversation now. She leads an Alzheimer's support group, and her own mother-in-law, 90-year-old Aileen Vance, has lived at Beatitudes for the past 5 years. And Mae, tell us about your mother-in-law. What's her condition like?
She's at the later stage of Alzheimer's. She speaks, but not really in understandable sentences. She can maybe string a couple words together. She was not quite to that spot when we placed her at Beatitudes. But we liked the idea that they did have, you know, they didn't have to have a certain meal time, a certain bedtime, a certain bath time. And that's really the reason we chose Beatitudes.
Mae, does she seem happy?
She's happy. She's at a very fine place in her life. She's one of the favorites because she doesn't have white hair. Her hair is still brown and a little bit of gray. So she doesn't look at her 90
years. At 90 years old.
And she's a Southern belle. She's friendly and loves affection, and they touch her and hold her hand, and she returns that. She loves the animals, the pet therapy, and the children that come to visit. And she's just an easy person to be around.
You mentioned the pets and some of the kids who visit, but has there been a specific treatment that you feel that Beatitudes has helped your mother-in-law?
Just by, she's not on drugs. She's not, you know, just faded away with drugs. Of course, she loves the sweets that they pass out whenever, just about every day, the warm, fresh-baked cookies that Kathy provides. And just the general attitude there is it's all about the patient.
Peggy, when is this too much? When is it too much cookies or too many and too few drugs for a patient? And some people might be listening and thinking, this is not the way you care for somebody in late stages Alzheimer's. They need more medical attention.
Well, the fact of the matter is, sadly, Alzheimer's is a terminal disease. So nothing we can do in terms of pharmaceuticals is going to fix the problem. So the emphasis is not on cure. It is on comfort and security. And by security, I mean a sense of well-being. You know, that's really all we want, and that's all we can provide for these people because there is no cure. So why would you worry about how much sodium or how much fat is in their diet? The bigger problem that people with Alzheimer's experience is tremendous weight loss, not weight gain from too much chocolate.
Peggy, this sounds like a great way to treat Alzheimer's patients when you have 24-hour staff in a controlled nursing home facility, but many, many people are dealing with this at home. So how is there training available to family members, or what would you suggest to those caring for Alzheimer's patients at home?
Well, you raise a very good point. Caregiver burnout is a huge problem, and it as often leads to premature institutionalization. The Alzheimer's Association across the country provides a great deal of caregiver support, and they're a good resource.
Tell me some of the things that they would teach them.
Well, first of all, they would teach people to accept the fact that that person that they love so much is not going to recover, and help them become accepting of that to the point where they quit fighting it. What that does is it allows the person to actually have these pleasant interchanges instead of constantly correcting the elder. You know, I think back to my own experience. I'm second generation at this. I only knew my grandmother, Ethel, as a patient in our family-owned nursing home. She came to live with us in the nursing home when I was about 12 years old, and she had what I would call mid-stage dementia at that point. She was so worried one day that her husband wasn't home. And back in 1965, we said to her, "Well, Grandma, you have to remember, Grandpa died." All that did for her was to cause her to go into grief all over again. It certainly didn't satisfy her. If someone said that to me today and they said, "Oh, my husband is so late, I don't know where he is," even if he had died 30 years ago, what I would say instead is, "Oh, that must make you feel terrible. Where do you think he is?" "Oh, he might be at the dry cleaner." "I bet he's at the dry cleaner. Gosh, don't those cookies smell good?" So what you learn from an experience like ours is to help people distract that person with Alzheimer's rather than trying to rationalize with them, because you're expecting the impossible. They cannot rationalize.
But that is not easy. May, have you dealt with this before?
In my support group, one of the biggest problems is acceptance once they have a diagnosis. And I have, for some reason, I have several early onset folks that are in their 60s or late 50s, and the spouse is still working and trying to maintain a life, and it's very difficult. The biggest problem is acceptance and not denial, just realizing that this is how it's going to be, and it's not going to get any better, and I have to see what I can do about this and go from there. And just like Peggy said, don't argue, just accept whatever it is they're saying, or they're asking the same question 50 times in an hour, and you just... patience probably pays off. And then, of course, there's just self-care for caregivers. They have to remember to take care of their own health and well-being so that they can continue to take care of their loved one.
And it only gets more difficult as Alzheimer's progresses and the person fails to remember even who they're married to or their own children.
Or themselves, eventually, yes.
You asked the question, you know, or pointed out that it's much harder to do this in one's own home than it is in an organization that's staffed 24 hours. And I do think we need to really emphasize how important that self-care is, bringing somebody in to give that home caretaker a break, giving them a chance to take a vacation with their family. These things sound so easy to do, and people are always saying, well, what can I do to help you? Caregivers need to learn to admit what they, or first to recognize what they need, to then admit it and ask for some help.
Peggy Mullen is CEO of Beatitudes Campus, a Phoenix, Arizona facility that has made inroads in their treatment of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. Thank you, Peggy.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We also spoke with Mae Vance. Her mother-in-law, Aline, is a resident at Beatitudes. Thank you, Mae.
Thank you for doing this story.
To see photos of residents at Beatitudes, go to hereandnow.org. Next week on the show, talk about healthcare reform. Imagine providing coverage to 1.3 billion people. That's what China's trying to do. That's next week. Still ahead today, American Idol amps up the star power with new judges J-Lo and Steven Tyler. News is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.